Good afternoon, John Williams. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's your producer, and Terry Savage, the Wednesday guest, the nationally syndicated financial columnist and author from terrysavage.com, is in our studio, which makes the show just that much more fun for me, and I think better for you. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Now that I gave you my opinion on auto racing, so I hear about the economy or
so
something.
So she said, really, John, were you just faking that? And I said, no, Terry, here's what happens. You'll hear the vroom, vroom. But then they'll say, now let's go to Terry in corner two. And then there's Terry saying, well, I just saw the guy do this. And then let's go to the pit stop. And now let's go to Gasoline Alley. And that will. And then another guy comes on and he says, the history of this race is that that's never happened before. And they just go bam, bam, bam. And it's like they're reading a script 90 miles an hour. And you feel like you're there.
What time does that come on? Is it like spots throughout the morning?
Huh?
So we have to stay tuned.
No. This is our coverage of the race. It's 7 a.m. on Sunday.
On Sunday.
This will actually be the race.
The race itself. Oh, that'll be cool. As opposed to TV.
Right. I mean, you will, because
it's a blur.
We'll have it on all day. It's only 500 miles. When you do 200 miles an hour, it's a two-hour race.
Yep. So, I remember it.
But the whole day is just really fun to have it on.
That's a great idea for
Sunday. I'm exhausted.
Okay. Let's talk about the economy. We are in such a strange thing. Picture, I'm going to give you a mental picture. You know, the scales of justice with the things on each side. You put things in and weigh them down. On the one side of the scale is inflation, which we're all, this is not news, but you and I started talking about this a long, long time ago. And that is pushing prices up in energy prices. Now I have a headline for you just today coming out. Surging prices of natural gas above $9. It's British thermal units. Forget that. What that means is all of you who are already tired of paying $60 to fill up your gasoline tank because of the disruption in supplies from Russia are now going to find if you cool your house with gas, if that's your natural gas, your air conditioning bill is going to soar this summer.
Hmm.
Heard it here. A lot, and it's going to react immediately. So that'll add to higher prices. Food, we've talked about disruptions in the harvest that will take place and the distribution of grains and so forth. It's not that we won't get our wheat from our farms. It's just that those are world markets. Prices are set globally, and you will see food prices continue to go up. So energy is contributing to everything, including gasoline, to trucking things. And wages, of course, are now going up to try and keep up. This in a period of low unemployment. So that bodes for a lot of inflation. The Fed, sitting there at the middle holding those two scales, is going, we're going to have to put our finger on the scale. But here's what's happening. They've only raised rates once, 0.5%. They're going to do it again this month for sure, at least 0.5%. And they're already beginning to see stuff happen. Consumer spending is slacking off. You saw the department stores, especially at the low end, Target and Walmart. Not at Nordstrom's, interestingly enough. Housing is slowing down. We had a report yesterday. I think it was a 12% decline in sales of new houses. Why? Because they're becoming unaffordable. A monthly mortgage payment up as much as $400 or $500 a month just from the beginning of this year because of mortgage rates going up. And actually, the market's been down so much that the stock market itself has an impact on consumer psyches and could contribute to consumers saying, wait a minute, things must not be going well. Look, I read the market was down. They don't particularly look at their investments or their 401k, but that's a negativity thing. And business spending, it looks like from today's report, is tapering off a little bit. So that would slow the economy. So now you have the scale of justice. On the one side, inflation, prices chasing each other up for a good reason. On the other side, the impact of the Fed slowing things down. And you're asking me where this is all going to balance out. I don't know. I suspect it will be at a lower point on the stock market. But all the big question is, will they cause a slowdown or a recession? And some forecasts now are making the second quarter look like, well, it might not be negative the way the first quarter was in growth. It could come pretty close. So that's where we are.
All of those are negative things. I've got a list of five things that are positive. TerrySavage.com is the website. Okay, five things that are positive in the world. The equity in your home is very high right now.
Good. Agree.
Wages are up.
Agree.
Unemployment is historically low. Employment is historically high. There's a lot of cash and savings that people have. That's some of that's still on the sidelines,
right?
Or at least is available to people. Supply chain issues will resolve themselves. It doesn't require the Fed. It doesn't require the pandemic to go away. The supply chain issues.
It requires China to get back in business.
Fair enough. And that's tied to some of those things. But I think the supply chain resolution is imaginable. So while I know all of these factors are bad and inflation is going up and interest rates are too, so then you mentally cling to some hope that it's not all bad.
I do. It's always said it's like the scales of justice balancing out. On the one side are all the positive things I mentioned, and the other is maybe the Fed can engineer kind of a reversal of inflation expectations.
But they
got to contend with real prices going up.
Well, they should have started a lot sooner is the mistake.
Hindsight is always 20/20.
I've heard that before. Listen to this. 630 says, John, I just got my NICOR bill. My therm costs went to $1.11 from 55 cents last month. Not all of us are heat cooling our homes with gas, though. So maybe that will ease the pain for some folks. I mean, your electric bill, I understand, is going up as well.
Okay. The price of natural gas has more than doubled this year.
But do they use natural gas to generate electricity?
Electricity is used to move natural gas through the pipelines.
Electricity, yeah, but I'm not buying natural gas in the summer. I'm buying electricity.
Yeah, but
my cooling bill, my air conditioner runs on air conditioning.
It runs on electricity. Right.
So the fact that gas is going up is more problematic in the cold months.
Absolutely. But gas and electricity are tied together in ways that even I don't understand. And I'm just letting you know that some basic things, and somebody's going to call in and say, our electricity plants are fired with natural gas. I don't know that.
Yeah.
All I'm telling you is that natural gas is up 30% this month. Where are we? At the 25th-ish or
today
something
is
like
the
that?
25th.
Okay, but they are up 150% for 2022. Don't tell me that doesn't have an impact throughout the economy.
Can I, John Williams, can I purchase, it's for Terry, obviously, can I purchase I-bonds with IRA 401k 403b funds and roll them into an IRA?
No. For an IRA, you need a custodian, an independent custodian. The federal government doesn't act as that, so you may not buy I-bonds with retirement money in any way, shape, or form.
224 says, please ask Terry Savage to explain the record profits posted by the oil companies in the first quarter of the year.
I'm not an apologist for the energy companies. Their stocks are up dramatically as well. So here's the question I want to pose to you. A lot of them will be taking write-offs for sure for relationships they have that are related to Russia and so forth. But if they didn't have any profits, they wouldn't be drilling for more energy, or giving dividends to the shareholders who have these companies in their 401k. Listen, what can they do with their profits? They can pay their executives more. Yep, they pay their executives a lot. They can dividend the money out to shareholders, right? They don't just sit on it. Or they take certain charges for write-offs, and then they earmark the money for drilling and pipelines and building out more energy resources. Now, we've had a lot of policies against doing that, a lot of disincentives. And despite the fact that everybody wants a cleaner air and energy, my question to you is, would you prefer that every oil company just stop exploring and drilling? Look what happens to your heating oil and your
Right, when there's a lack of supply. But I mean, so profitable companies are good things, particularly if you invest in them in your 401k, say.
Right.
There's part of your pension plan or something like that. But couldn't they just lower the price of energy a little bit for some of us right now? Throw us a bone here? How many billions of dollars does ExxonMobil have sitting on the sidelines right now? Couldn't they lower the price a little?
You know, a business sets its prices to this is the way a free enterprise economy works, to maximize profits and also in the interests of its shareholders. And in recent years, I'd say the last 20 or 30 years, I was on the board of directors of McDonald's 30 years ago, and we all said we had a three-legged stool. We had our shareholders and our franchisees and our employees. We're all part of the community we tried to serve. McDonald's was very far ahead in that. And I think now you're beginning to see, in the realm of corporate social responsibility, a reaction to maximizing profits at the expense of perhaps the The atmosphere, the
economy
climate.
In general, or the employees, or the prices customers pay.
But this is the way the free enterprise world
works.
I
know that, but that
and it does provide the energy we have available now.
I understand that, but that fiduciary responsibility that they cling to, because that's either the law or the corporate ethos, that fiduciary responsibility, return maximum profit to shareholders, I think neglects other things.
Let me ask you the counter argument. So, let's just say we could wave a magic wand. How would you like government producing all the energy? Just suppose government said, that's it. We've had enough of your profits. We're going to take over all the oil companies.
Very hypothetical.
Well, but would you want government, the same government that for years ran the post office,
Okay,
and that runs the unemployment department in Illinois, for example.
I think
do you
that's
want
a
that
hypothetical
government?
Question.
No,
okay.
That's the extremes. On the one hand, if you want an organization that tries to do everything for everyone, you have government. And on the other hand, if you want efficient and profitable economic growth that creates jobs and so forth and goes up and down with the business cycle, then you have private enterprise. We try and hang out a little toward the private enterprise site in America, because every other economy in the universe that ever tried centralized management, like the old Soviet Union or Cuba, found itself in poverty.
Okay, stop right there. It's 1228. Terry and I will take more of your personal finance questions and stop talking about world economics in just a minute. 312, maybe we won't. 312-981-7200. John Williams here on the Wintrust Business Lunch with nationally syndicated financial columnist Terry Savage, who you search for at terrysavage.com. She's got an article up today about paying for college, which is a common topic these days. We're also answering your questions about your personal finance. Terry, ready to roll some calls?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's start with Carrie. You're on WGN. Carrie, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, John. Good afternoon, Terry. How are you doing today?
Good.
Yes, I have a question for Terry about Treasury I-bonds. I contacted your office, and you sent me an email about what to do, because I have some money in the bank that I'd like to invest in, because I'm not getting any interest with it. I want to know, is it true you only could invest $10,000 in 1 year for a Treasury bill?
Not Treasury bills, but Series I savings bonds. The maximum you can buy in any 1 year, like too much of a good thing, they don't want you to have it, is $10,000. So you could buy $10,000. If you're married, your wife can buy $10,000. You can buy $10,000 for each of your kids, but $10,000 for each Social Security number.
Then you leave it in for the year, and then it'll roll over. I think it's like 9.6.
No. If I sent you the link, which is how I've been responding on my blog at terrysavage.com, and to people who email, I think it's the second or third column down now, how to buy I-bonds, everything you need to know. Those rates automatically change every 6 months to adjust to keep up with the changes in inflation. You need to hold them for at least a full year for sure, and 5 years to avoid a 3 months loss of interest penalty. And you just buy those and put those away. That is not in a way comparable to money you'd have in a money market account, where you could write a check tomorrow, take some or all of it out to pay for, you know, when your refrigerator breaks or you need new tires.
So put money in there, Carrie, that you don't need for 5 years.
Just put it away. Okay. And then, by the way, you will not pay state income taxes when you cash them in, and you pay ordinary income taxes on them.
Carrie, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate your response.
Call. Yeah, a lot of folks have questions about that. In fact, I think Diana does, too. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Diana?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Quick question. I recently retired. I'm going to be 67, and I have a pension, which was frozen about 15 years ago. Anyway, my question to you is, do you recommend taking it out in a one lump sum with a 20% fee on that, or I would get like $1,290 a month?
Okay,
you know,
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. We are now talking about a pension, which is a guaranteed pension for the rest of your life?
Right. I would get it if I opt to do it monthly.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And does it ever have an inflation adjustment on it?
I don't think so. That I'd have to look more into.
You need to look into that. Because right now, if inflation continues at 7% in less than a decade, the buying power of that $1,200-and-something-dollar pension every month will be cut in half. On the other hand, if you take it out now, it's not just 20%. It will be added on to your ordinary income this year, and it will be taxed at whatever your marginal tax rate is. And if you're signing up for Medicare now, it'll impact your Part B premiums. What I'm trying to say is this is not just a Terry, do this or don't do that kind of answer. This is a requirement that you now sit and look at what else you have. You need a fee-only fiduciary financial planner. Go to WealthRamp.com, WealthRamp.com. Find a fee-only financial planner you can trust, a fiduciary. Yeah. I get nothing out of this. I want you to have someone look at your whole picture and help you make that decision.
Terry Savage is in our studio answering more of your questions as she does on Wednesdays. Now, this sounds, I'm not sure what the purpose of this question is, Terry, but somebody said, when did the Dow first break 1,000? When did the Dow first break 10,000? It's just under 32K now. When's it going to hit 40,100?
Yeah. I am going to look in my crystal ball right now.
Okay, but when did it do 1,000 and 10,000?
Broke above 1,000 in fall of 1972. I know that because I use it in my speeches. And because that was just before the options exchange opened in April of 73, and I was on the trading floor then, and the Dow fell, it went over 1,000. It was really a big deal in 72. And then it broke to a low, an intraday low of 570.01. Something else I remember.
It hit 1,000, then went to drop
400. 570. So yeah, that's what we're talking about.
It gave 40%.
Right, 45% or so. And by the way, the Dow stayed below 800 for a decade.
Why?
And didn't rise above it, above 1,000 again, until end of August in 1982. Well, that was during the period when there was inflation and so forth, and interest rates kept going up. We had a 21% prime interest rate. That was the bank lending rate that everybody watched in 1980. Paul Volcker took over to raise rates and break the back of inflation. That's the history that young people don't remember, but I remember that. I remember interviewing Paul Volcker during that period. And then finally, the guru of Salomon Brothers and the president, President Reagan, you know, gave Paul Volcker the go ahead to do this. And then all of a sudden, the guru of Salomon Brothers said, you know, who had been predicting high rates all the way up, I think rates have reached their peak. And the market just heaved a sigh of relief. Rates did come down, and the stock market exploded that year to be over 1,000 again in August of 82.
82.
Yeah. So, but think about that. Just the lesson is, you know, things happen faster now. But there could be a 10-year, what I call bear market, a 10-year nothing market was what it really was, number one. And number two, it's not impossible for the markets to go down that. I mean, I told you 51% decline in 2007, 2008.
Yeah, no kidding. 2007, the housing bubble.
The housing market break, and yeah. and the dot-com bubble, the S&P was down 48%.
It's now 12:45. 312-981-7200. More of your nuts and bolts questions and answers from Terry Savage in a minute. We've got more business news for you, too. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. State Farm Insurance has been criticized for pulling out of a partnership supporting LGBTQ literacy for children after right-wing activists complained about it on Twitter. The Bloomington-based company announced it was collaborating with Gender Cool, a nonprofit that promotes inclusivity for young people. The program included books about gender identity. One Twitter account accused the company of being a creepy neighbor trying to indoctrinate children. The backlash from State Farm customers who support LGBTQ causes includes threats to cancel policies. State Farm says it's now exploring how it can support other organizations that align with its commitment to diversity and inclusion. The Schaumburg Village Board has advanced a proposal to potentially allow residential development around Woodfield Mall for the first time since it was built more than 50 years ago. Trustees met last night and gave permission for new regulations to be drafted. The plan will be presented to the Zoning Board at a later date. It centers around property south of the mall and west of the streets of Woodfield. Proponents want the district to be converted from commercial use to mixed use, including residential buildings at least seven stories high. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time, Steve Alexander.
Yeah, Indy 500 coming up Sunday, Johnny, and which you can hear right here on WGN Radio at, 7 o'clock?
7 a.m.
Yeah. Vroom, vroom, Terry. And I have insider information. I already know who will be standing in Victory Circle at the end of the race. He is?
Tim Haynes, and I'm the veteran milkman for the Indianapolis 500.
That's right, the milkman who will be handing off the celebratory jug of milk to the winner of the race. Tim is a dairy farmer, a member of the American Dairy Association, Indiana.
We're a fifth-generation dairy farm. Myself, my wife, and my brother and his wife, and then we each have a son and their families that's involved in the dairy.
And robots. They have robots on their farm near Garrett, Indiana, north of Fort Wayne.
We have robots that help milk the cows, help feed them. Basically, the cows can go in anytime they want to get milked. They can go eat whenever they want. They can go lay down. We bed ours with sand, so it's about like laying on a beach.
Veteran milkman Tim Haynes, you'll see him right next to the winning driver on Sunday. Also in Victory Lane will be Carrie Estes, a dairy farmer from New Palestine, Indiana, who is the
rookie milkman. And the rookie gives milk to the crew chief and team owner.
Carrie's dairy story is a little unusual.
I'm actually a first-generation dairy farmer. My wife and I made a decision. We wanted to raise our family on a farm, so I left the family business back in the early 2000s, and we started milking in 2005.
And from milking 180 cows to being part of the Indy 500?
I literally this morning was out in the barn with my cows. Here I am today sitting at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's exhilarating.
And on race day?
We'll be staying downtown Indianapolis. We'll get a police escort to the track.
On board will be the Indiana milk that the winners will drink and probably pour over themselves.
That's the cool part about it. The milk at the Indianapolis 500 comes from an Indiana dairy farm, and it's given by an Indiana dairy farmer.
Okay. Thank you, rookie milkman Terry Estes, and thank you, veteran milkman Tim Haynes.
Thank you so much. And remember, winners drink milk.
WinnersDrinkMilk.com for more info. A lot of people, winners and losers, drink wine on today's National Wine Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry, a lot of our time has been eaten up by the news of the day.
Yeah, well, let's put that in perspective. Whether the market goes up a little bit or down a little bit, or your energy bill goes up or down, in context of what's going on, it's really relatively minor importance compared to what happened to yesterday.
Well, nothing is graver or more difficult to resolve than that. And you're right. Our fortunes are nothing if we don't have our lives. Can I ask you one last question about I-bonds?
Yes.
Question for Terry. RE I-bonds. Recently bought $10,000. Will I receive any hard copy I-bond certificates?
No, that's the good old days of paper I-bonds. You go to your account at treasurydirect.gov. By the way, that article is still among the top three under columns at terrysavage.com, a direct link to the place where you buy them. But it's all electronic now. If you have old paper bonds, you can actually easily convert them to electronic.
And listen to this. Could Terry do a quick calculation for us on the value of a $10,000 investment of an I-bond held for 5 years at the current interest rate? You're not going to because you're not going to get the current interest rate.
First of all, look, watch this. I-bonds carry a base rate of zero. It wasn't always that way. But 15 years ago, the base rates were significantly higher. Every 6 months, they add an inflation adjustment to that. Someone you mentioned called in texted in and asked, could it go below zero? No. If you put $10,000 in, you could not get less than $10,000 back in 5 years. However, you could get less overall than the current 9.62% because they compare year over year inflation. And it'd be astounding if inflation kept going at this kind of a rate.
Right, but the idea is I'm going to give you $10,000. 5 years, how much do I have coming out? And you can't know that because you don't know what the
6 month adjustments will be. But if you want to know what your old bonds are worth today, assuming you've held them long enough to avoid that penalty of 3 months loss of interest, just go to treasurydirect.gov and you could just put in the year of the serial number.
We're out of time. That's Terry Savage. Find out more at terrysavage.com. It's nice to see you, my friend.
Good to be here.
We always appreciate her advice and help.